All right, everybody, we'll get started with, I believe, what is our penultimate class in the Wisdom for a Smartphone Age, right? So we are nearing the end. Let me pray for us, and then we'll begin this session. God, we thank you for this day. We thank you for taking care of us and just giving us life. God, we thank you for being our shepherd, even as we think of the fact that you are with us, guiding us, leading us. That when you are with us, we have nothing to fear. That when you are with us, we have access to the joy that comes from walking with you. And so we thank you for these gifts. Thank you for the blessings of being your people. And we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Wisdom for a Smartphone Age. So we're talking today about the danger of mistreating others in our online communication and conflict. Before I do that, before we jump into that, any questions, thoughts, personal applications that you've been trying to make over the previous weeks? I have one I'll share from somebody who's not in here, but they told me about it. But anybody else want to share anything or ask anything? It's okay if you don't, but yeah, good, Steve.
One thing I thought about was the idea of praying over history of the sites that we've gone to, like landing before the Lord, and see what do I look at during the day. I haven't done this yet.
Sure.
But looking at, see where I've been and where I'm going and what's being reflected by the places I've gone to.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of like a search me and know me, Lord, reveal with me, reveal in me if there are any wayward thoughts, ways. Yeah.
Things
to be encouraged by. Yeah. Yeah, so I think that is important, right? We walk with the Lord, right? He's with us, and so we want to be in communication with him about these habits, these things. Good. Anything else?
I was listening to a book on audio there this past week, and in it, one of the characters during a situation, one of the characters spoke about, you know, one of the problems we have in this community is not showing enough charity to one another.
Yeah.
And it was funny because that evening when we were reading, that came up.
Yeah.
In the
book
in
as well.
Book
yeah,
as
yeah.
Well.
That's right. Yeah. 12 Ways Your Phone Is Changing You. Yeah. Lack of charity. That's kind of to some degree what we're really looking at today, because that's kind of what the chapter's about today. So good. So I mentioned that this person wasn't in here, but this person is in here. You had mentioned to me, at the end of last, not to put you on the spot, but you know, you were here. I heard you were in nursery. That's why I didn't think you were in here.
Thank
but
you.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, you're just trying to get out of answering this, having to share. But it's okay. So Terry had mentioned device software. So my wife is in nursery, and she's like, I'm going to be in there with Terry Cristiano today. So I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, that's kind of a bummer. I was going to ask her to share about this thing. But all right. So it's called the Brick. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's like a little just plastic box, I think, that you can stick anywhere. You can share about it, but
it's on the refrigerator.
Yeah. And so it only works for iOS right now. That's what Terry and I were talking about, because I had heard of it and I had looked into it, but I have Android and it doesn't work yet on Android. I don't know if they've come out with that yet. But it's a way to kind of lock down your phone from things that distract you. You can tell it all the different things you want, all the different rules you want. And what it is you have to actually touch your phone to the physical block, and that will automatically put it into that lockdown mode.
Or unlock it.
So if you have a moment of weakness, right, and you want to unlock it, you have to physically get up, go find this little block wherever you put it, and touch your phone to it. That's kind of that adding friction component we talked about, right? So obviously, like, if you're just... Man, if you need to cut the phone off completely because you're an addict completely, then that's what you need to do. But if you have enough self-control, but you just need extra friction, that's one way to do it, right? I'm not saying it's the way. I'm just saying it's one way. You may look into that. I'm not sponsored or endorsed by them. But if they're listening to this and they would like to make a charitable donation to our church, no, I'm just kidding. I don't know anything about them. I've never used it, so I'm not even necessarily advocating for it. But just talk to each other. Come up with ideas. That's what I'm saying, to help you wherever you're at. Because we're all at different places where we struggle, where we benefit from our smart devices. So, all right, anything else?
How do you spell that?
Brick, just Brick, BRICK. Yeah.
Getbrick.app.
That's what it is, getbrick.app.
And you can set it up on a schedule as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where it only opens up those on your phone, and it only opens up access to those apps.
But it,
at a particular time.
So a schedule component. But if you, and if you want it to not run on the schedule, you have to go tap it and then make your changes. Yeah. And I think my understanding is you can have more than one of the bricks boxes. So you could have, you know, one in your car in case of emergency, right? Like you're going somewhere and you like realize your tickets for that event were on your phone and now you can't access whatever it is. That could be one way to do it, which is crazy that that becomes our emergencies, right? We got a problem. Could we just go back to printing these things? Anyway, all right. So let's move on. Discussion question. What words would you use to describe online communication? Thinking mainly social media, text messages, group messaging apps. This can be positive or negative. I'm not just going for negative right now, but what are some positive, negative things words you'd use to describe that?
Immediacy.
What is it?
Immediacy.
So just a can be done right away. There's really nothing standing between you and making the communication to somebody. Distance no longer stands between you and that communication.
Thought.
So that's the downside, right? Not even having to give thought to what you're going to say. Yeah. What else?
Personal.
What was it?
Non-personal.
Okay, yeah, so non-personal. So there's kind of a stepping back of the face-to-face personalness of communication.
You can't feel the emotions or the context or any of that.
Yeah.
They didn't use an exclamation point. It's a period they're mad at.
Right. Yeah. A lot more can be read into it. So I was a communication student and I took a class on nonverbal communication. And I mean, granted, this professor's job was based on her saying that nonverbal communication was important. But her point was, there's a good chunk, I don't forget what the percentage was, of our communication that is nonverbal, meaning tone of voice, body posture positions, facial expressions, all sorts of stuff, right? So.
Reactive?
Okay, reactive. Yeah. So that kind of goes with the unthinking nature, perhaps, right? That instead of thoughtful responses to one another, it's very reactive. Yeah.
Bullet points. It's bullet points.
Okay, bullet points. So it's very short.
Yeah, short.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So by its nature, it tends to be pretty limited in the amount of context, information, things that can be conveyed. It tends towards bullet point communication.
I think also it helps us clarify what emotions we are using because of emojis. We can use emotional context to kind of document how we feel about something.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yeah. And so to be clear, we're not saying that it's necessarily bad. We're just saying, you know, what describes it. And some of it is dangerous and bad, and that's what we're trying to evaluate. So anything else? Yeah.
On the flip side, it helps us communicate everywhere and all times.
Yeah.
If we're in an emergency, our car breaks down.
That's right.
We can call.
Yeah.
Be stuck on the side of the road.
Yeah. It gives you, so that immediacy of communication, the distance is not the barrier anymore, right? Which has a strong benefit to it. You know, you have family across the globe somewhere. Being able to not always just have to sit down and make a full video call, but being able to text them can add some level of connection, right? Good. Well, I'm sure we could go on and on. I had some other thoughts on the negative side. Oftentimes, when you talk about social media and even texting, can be trivial communication, right? It can be very kind of just, again, there's not anything inherently always wrong with trivial, but if that becomes the bulk of our communication, that's going to be a problem. Outrage tends to characterize a lot of it. Boasting. I put fake. I guess I was just thinking of that word can mean multiple things there. But okay, for now, let's go on. You can turn to 2 Timothy 3. While you're doing that, I'm going to talk about this idea of, in some ways, I think digital technology, so communication and its problems are the same. Nothing's really changed over time, except for there is a kind of Wild West component to it of communication in digital form. What does that idea mean when we say it's like digital communication, social media especially, but maybe also texting, can be kind of like the Wild West of communication? What do you think I mean by that? What was it?
Anything goes.
Yeah. So when you think of Wild West, it was kind of the idea you were beyond where the normal law enforcement operated. Maybe you had, you know, one guy who's kind of functioning as the sheriff, but there wasn't like the strict norms were not necessarily always going to be enforced, right? It was easier for things that would not normally happen in a populated area to happen in out west. I think that's what it means. I might be wrong. That's just the way I've always understood it. That's the way I'm using it. So whether you like it or not, that's what we're talking about. And so think about it this way. You know, what I'm comparing it to is face-to-face communication mainly. Okay. So what's kind of Wild West-ish about like this digital form of technology compared to face-to-face technology, or face-to-face non-technology communication?
False sense of anonymity.
A false sense of anonymity. Yes. Yeah. When you're face-to-face, it's a little harder, right? Like, because if you show up in a ski mask to talk to someone, they're kind of like, okay, we have a problem, right? And you're getting pepper spray or something, right? But online, people can just show up and they can come from anywhere and make comments or say things. Yeah.
I was going to say the same thing. It's just like people in, even like in business, they'll send very aggressive emails. And then you get them on the phone or in person and then confront them on that. They're like, oh, no.
Right.
They'll back off.
So yeah.
Yeah, kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I think that aggressiveness certainly. So, yeah, one of the things I had in mind was if you think about it, what would happen if, let's say, you know, you didn't know me and then you're sitting at home in your living room, you know, you're not watching TV, you're reading a good book because we're talking about minimizing our screen time. You're reading a good book and I just, your front door happens to be unlocked and I just walk in and I start screaming at you, right? About something you had said earlier in the day that you didn't even know. I was just walking down the street past you. We don't know each other, but I heard you say it. I tracked you down. I followed you. I showed up at your home and now I'm screaming and shouting. What's probably going to happen?
Shot.
I might get shot depending. Okay, so now you know who's home not to do that to, right? Because they take things seriously and they're prepared. You may end up, the police may be called, right? I mean, this is, okay. Now, but think about how online communication, those norms are not really there, right? Somebody who has no idea who you are just can bust in and start accusing you of all sorts of stuff, aggressive talking. Maybe it is even someone you know through a business relationship, and then you call on the phone and you realize, my point is the norm is not the, it's almost like we're okay with this new form of communication lacking rules and civility, but then we still recognize that in face-to-face communication, that doesn't work. That doesn't, now I will say, I do think people have become more and more aggressive in face-to-face communication. And I think some of this is the dehumanizing effect of the way we tend to think of one another as pixels and ones and zeros. We tend to think more of people not in the image of God and fellow people, but as computers. We've started to think in that way, right? Our tools affect our metaphors that we use to think about life and people around us. Just to be clear, to caveat that. I'm not saying I'm all about people being able to express their opinions online and stuff. The point is not, hey, we should go arrest those people because it's the same thing as them showing up in your house. Yes, okay, there's a difference when someone shows up in your house. There's a physical, I get that. But my point is we tend in our culture not to think that, man, the same rules that apply over here in face-to-face, why would that not apply online? Does that make sense? Because there's still a person behind that, but we don't think of them that way. That's my point.
Happened in the UK, where like if you're saying certain things online,
right, they would just show up and like arrest you because it was like, yeah, but it depended on what you were saying, right? Were you on the right side of the social argument or not? Yeah. So yeah, so I'm not advocating for the government controlling what we say to one another online, even if it is rude and unkind. My point is just to say socially, the mores of civility in communication, it is like the Wild West online. Right. So, Jeff.
Wild card in all this, and 2025 is without question the year that AI has come into critical mass. Meaning,
sure,
we got to deal with it. There's no turning back.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
This is just going to get worse.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
We may have to do a whole new series next week.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah. We've touched on it a little bit. My kids have enjoyed talking about this friend that Doug mentioned we can purchase, and they are looking to get theirs, and they will return it if it doesn't live up to their expectations. All right, so let me read from 2 Timothy 3:3-5. I think this is somewhat, we see this is kind of what's going to characterize communication in the last days or just relationships. And so here's what he says, verse 3 of 2 Timothy 3. But understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. Avoid such people. I want to point out just a couple things real quick here. First of all, notice it begins and ends with misplaced love. That is what is sandwiching all the different stuff in the middle. Right? They love themselves, they love money, they love pleasure, they don't love God. So it's no surprise that all these behaviors and motives increase when there's no connection to God in your life. I think that's part of the reason we expect that this is going to continue to ramp up in the last days. So we certainly see this kind of ramping up. And notice the other thing I'll point out, we're going to look at a couple of these ideas. We're not necessarily going to go word for word through this passage, but just notice also we are to what with these people, verse 5?
Avoid
them, right? We are to avoid people who are giving themselves over to this. Now, I don't think that means we don't share the gospel with people like this. Now, there does come a time where you don't cast pearls before swine when it's been proven, hey, we're talking about someone who they're just trampling on. When I throw out the grace of God, they just trample on it. At some point, you're not throwing that out there. But does God save people who are all these things? Yeah, I mean, look at 1 Corinthians 6, right? Such were some of you, and yet you were washed, you were redeemed. So when he says avoid, I think it's primarily talking about probably within so-called Christian circles, but the reality too is even in the world, we're not making close connections with this type of person. So that does factor into when we think about who are we going to follow and relate to online even? Are they, and you know what? They could be from our tribe politically or ethically on some things, but that doesn't give them a free pass, does it? But where they're right, we affirm they're right. Where they're wrong, we affirm they're wrong. It doesn't really, the other stuff doesn't really matter. We're going to see more about that later. Our goal is really truth and love, right? That's really the main thing that motivates us. And we do have a tribe, by the way, right? I mean, we're Christians, so we're not ashamed of that. That's who we are. Okay. So let's jump into some dangers related to mistreating others in our communication and conflict. A couple things just to remind you here real quick. One, these issues were issues prior to the smartphone age. They have been amplified in terms of how widespread they are, how deep they run. I'm going to try to point that out as we go along rather than do a whole separate section on that this time, but I just always want to make sure we're aware of that. I'm not pretending like these were not issues before the smartphone, okay? But there is a real sense in which there's new dangers associated with our smartphones. Number two, we speak from our heart. Communication comes out of us and shows what's inside of our heart. So like, you know, like was being said earlier, you have people that they are very rude, perhaps, which we're talking about what rudeness is, how we define that biblically in their communication. Well, just saying I did that because it was online, whether it comes out of this part of your mouth or your mouth this way, it's coming out of your heart, and you have to take ownership of that, right? That's the reality we have to realize. Okay, let's deal with being unappeasable. I call this the inner troll. So this idea of trolling where you're going around, you're trying to ramp people up, get them upset about something, but the goal is not to yield some sort of actual peaceful resolution to conflict. The goal is just to stir up the other side, right? And it's not to make peace. That's not the goal of this type of communication. So I'm going to read a couple lengthy quotes from the book just because I thought there were some really helpful points, and I figured rather than reinvent the wheel, I'd just read them to you. So I'm going to read to you a little bit of a longer quote from a footnote, actually, in the Ranky book. I think I tell you what page it's on. I don't have it right in front of me here. So I'm going to read it, and it's probably longer than what I give you there. He's talking about the word irreconcilability, which is also translated unappeasable in this passage, okay? And he talks about the Greek word, and he says, "It is a sin that will heighten in the last days," says Paul, 2 Timothy 3:3. "It emerges in one who is unwilling to reconcile, unwilling to be at peace with others, and unwilling to negotiate a solution to a problem involving a second party. He is implacable." Unappeasable, ESV, irreconcilable, NASB, and unforgiving, NIV. Paul chooses an ancient Greek war term, meaning at its root, a refusal to enter into a treaty, to take a posture in which no flag of truce is allowed to pass between the parties. No terms of reconcilement are listened to. The irreconcilable party refuses to bring a state of war to an equitable close. Even in a stalemate, he will not lay down his weapon. As Paul makes clear to Pastor Timothy, this person will not only keep up the fight, he will also contend he is acting in accord with Christian faith, maintaining that his irreconcilability is biblically justifiable. It is not, and so we must avoid him or block him, mute him, or do whatever is necessary to avoid him online. So I think what we see here is, hopefully you get the idea of, is it's a warlike state. It's a, I'm not going to make peace. My goal is not to make peace with you. It's just to prove that I'm right. Now, if you're right, I'm not saying you have to pretend like you're not right. That's not the point. The point is you don't just keep fighting for the sake of fighting, right? And there has to be an appeasableness. If someone's really wronged you, there's got to be a goal to, can we get to some state of peace again, right? As much as it depends on you, live at peace. Now, what it is important to recognize, they may not allow peace. They may be unreconcilable. Well, if it's online, you don't just keep going back and forth with them. They're unappeasable at some point. It doesn't matter what you say. You're not going to appease them, right? And so we need to recognize this as a danger. The goal just becomes to be at odds with other people and perhaps even to thrive on that, to thrive on being at odds with other people, to find some sort of pleasure in that. And I think that is a dangerous place to be, communicating with hostility with no goal of resolving it. So I call that the inner troll, right? This idea of trolling. Now, I'm not saying, is there a place to humbly, but yet truthfully, there are places to even mock foolishness. I mean, I'm not saying that. I will say you need to be very careful about doing that. And if you're not very, very, very spiritually mature, you probably shouldn't be doing that because you're probably going to end up doing it in a way that doesn't honor God. But there is a place for that. I agree with that. Okay, rudeness. 1 Corinthians 13 says that love is not rude, right? You've heard that before. So when we think about what the word rude means, it's the idea of behaving inappropriately towards other people. That is contrary to the standard to behave disgracefully, dishonorably, indecently. What I found helpful when I think of rudeness is you cross a line. You cross a line in terms of what would be acceptable given your relationship to this person and the way you're going to communicate to them, right? It is rude for your children to talk to you without some form of respect, right? That is rude. They have crossed a line because God has made you an authority figure in their life. It is rude to say things that are inappropriate. That crosses a line. You think about some of this innuendo people throw out there, right? That crosses a line. That's not appropriate. It can be needlessly either embarrassing people or making them feel uncomfortable. You know, some people, they'll come into a room and they will just ask any question of anybody. That can be rude, right? Because it crosses the boundary of you and I don't have that sort of relationship that you should ask me that question in this setting. Now, I'm not saying we need to just all button up our lips and never talk. And listen, you know, we're going to be rude at times. I'm just saying, just think of it like there's a line. There is a line that you can cross, right? And it depends on your relationship with the person, the setting of the situation, you know, and what the purpose, what the motive is behind it. All that stuff factors into it. So this takes a biblical wisdom. That's true. But rudeness is when we cross that line and we just need to be careful. In contrast, love shows an appropriate behavior as well as speech that fits the relationship, it fits the situation. So even like when we think about etiquette in society, right? Etiquette to some degree is culturally borne out. So I need to be careful. I don't go into someone else's home and just be like, look, you're being rude. Well, maybe I'm being rude by just showing up at their house and telling them what their culture should look like. That might be true, right? So it's not that everybody has to do it the same way, but etiquette does kind of fit under this, that within the structure that you're in, if you're stepping across that line, we're not necessarily talking sinful, but just stepping across the line, you're not being loving at some point, right? Now, to be clear, this gets more complicated, right? Because everybody has different places they're coming from. So, you know, just somebody saying, look, you're being rude. Well, okay, we're not doing tyranny of the minority here either, right? Just because you feel some way, that's tyranny as well. I'm just saying that doesn't mean there's not such a thing as being rude. There is. And we have to make sure before God, in our conscience, we're clear that we are not just stepping across lines to make people feel uncomfortable, to make them embarrassed when there's no real spiritual righteousness that's coming out of it, right? Does that make sense? Okay. So rudeness. Let's go on to anger. Turn to James 1. James 1. Thinking about anger in our online communication. It's going to come after Hebrews. James 1, 19 and 20. He writes, "Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger." And he's about to give you the reason. Because the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. So We are to be slow to anger. Now, is there such a thing as biblical righteous anger? Yes, Jesus certainly exhibited that. We can, in moments, exhibit that. Generally, we mix in other stuff, and it's not quite as righteous. You know, it could be more or less righteous. But okay, but my point here is what I really want to focus in on is slow to anger, and why? Because it doesn't produce the righteousness of God. My anger is not what's going to produce the righteousness of God in that person, right? So this becomes clear to you in dealing with your children. Right? You will become angry at times. Generally, though, that's not what produces the righteousness of God in them, right? Now, discipline might, but just sheer anger doesn't. Correction does, right? Okay, so we need to recognize anger can be an issue. And I think the issue here, too, is not only does it not accomplish God's righteous ends when we communicate just out of anger, it also produces a thick epistemological fog. So in other words, a fog that keeps us from being able to see truth, reality, how we know what we know. That all gets cloudy whenever we just let anger, when we live in kind of the fog of anger, right? And we've all experienced that, right? You get angry and you start saying things and later on you're like, that didn't even make sense what I was saying. Like, that was dumb. And so we just have to realize that when we give ourselves over to anger, that's what we're opening ourselves up to. And so, yes, it's foolish, and yes, it will hurt people around us, right? So, yeah.
I've noticed that anger makes people choose a side. It's also a bandwagon emotion.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So you choose a side, and you pick what side you get on, and it's easier to wrap people up with anger than just with depression or sadness.
That's right. Yeah.
Praise.
Yeah. So there's a mob mentality, a bandwagon mentality with anger that. And the other thing is anger. I think this has been pretty well documented. A lot of these algorithms and things tend to push things that will make you angry, like little snippets. Because why? That is what gets the most attention. Outrage gets attention. You look at how terrible this is. You should be outraged about this. And that gets more clicks. It's called clickbait, right? That's what it's called. Okay, so anger's an issue. Foolishness in our communication. You can turn to Proverbs 26. We're going to go a little faster through these. I think some of this was covered maybe in an earlier session, at least some of these ideas. But it's still good to look at a couple of them real quick. So foolishness in our communication ends up mistreating others. So Proverbs 26, verse 17, I'm going to give you a couple different areas of foolishness. One is entering into arguments that we are not rightly part of. That never happens online. Proverbs 26, 17, whoever meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a passing dog by the ears. So, you know, you're walking down social media pathway, you're just walking, you see something and you're like, oh, I have a very strong opinion about that. And the next thing you know, you're over here grabbing the Rottweiler by the ears and you're like, listen to me, right? And then what happens? You get bit in the face, right? Like, this is not the way to do it. So it is foolish to get, now, there are times where you are directly involved in an argument and you do need to be able to respond, you do need to be able to say something. But generally, this is not gonna be helpful. Pre-online, so this is good. This is good advice for kids, by the way, right? Your kids, you're trying to correct one of your other kids, and the other kid comes in and jumps in the middle of this argument that's going on, and you're like, you're about to get bit. You are jumping in the middle of something you don't need to be in the middle of right now. Like, back off, right? So I think, you know, this is just life 101. It's not just digital, but the reality is online, it is a lot easier because there's a lot more dogs walking around and you think you're going to not get bit up by grabbing them, right? And so we need to recognize that this still applies. Number two, answering a foolish person, 26:4, Proverbs 26:4, answering a foolish person according to our, when you shouldn't, I guess is what I'm going to say. Answering a foolish person when you should not. They're spouting off foolishness. It's in a situation where you're not going to be helping them and you just need to not respond. There's a place for that. Proverbs 26:4, answer not a fool according to his folly. Why? Lest you be like him yourself. If you're responding to the fool, it's going to draw you into foolishness. An argument that is with an unappeasable person, for example. That's one example. Or for you saying things that are foolish and not true. That is a time to not answer this fool according to their folly. It is interesting. I think it's the very next verse. It's somewhere around here where it does say, answer a fool according to their folly. There is a time and place to do that. So again, wisdom. I mean, so we like the black and white, and I get that, but we have a personal relationship with God and personal relationship with other people, and that takes wisdom. It's not a computer program. It's relational. It doesn't mean you just make up the rules. This is the rule book. This is the guidance system. You're just operating out of this and then applying it to what God's put right in front of you at that moment. Okay, so don't answer a fool according to their folly. It takes wisdom to know when you might need to do that. Hot takes rather than slow to speak. I remember I had a college student once, they're no longer here, who asked me for my hot take on something. They always like to ask me for that. And I said, I really try not to give hot takes because I think it's not biblical. I would rather not answer things I don't know the context to, right? I'm getting all these things. What do you think about this Christian leader who said this or did this? I don't know the context of that, and I don't think it's my job to figure it out right now. It might be. If it's affecting this body that I'm responsible to shepherd, then I am going to investigate it a little more. But I am not the Twitter police. I'm not going to go around policing everybody. That doesn't mean there's not a lot of wrong stuff going out there. It just means it's not my job, right? Same thing with you. So we need to recognize hot takes are generally not good. Hot takes are the immediate, impulsive, emotionally driven reposting of something, right? In an effort to be like, hey, look at this, or a response to something. Could even just be a like to something that you haven't given any thought to, right? Somebody's going on and on about how terrible somebody is, blah, blah, blah. If you, and number one, you probably shouldn't like that no matter what, because even if it was true, it's being slanderous. We're going to talk about that more later. But you probably don't even actually know enough information to click the like button at that point, right? Now, I do understand the like button communicates so many different things nowadays. So this is a caveat. I give so many caveats. It's irritating, isn't it? My wife gets irritated by it. Okay, but just because somebody likes something, please don't just take that personally. Because the reality is you don't know their motives either, and you have no idea what they were thinking. They could just be like, heard, yep, I see you said that, right? I mean, you don't know what they're saying, so just move on. That's okay. We don't take everything personally. Anyway, so here's helpful. I think this is a Ranke quote. I don't remember who. No, it's from the Wisdom Pyramid. Our quick draw posture on social media is often post first, think later, if we think at all. This is disastrous, not only because it makes us easy to manipulate, so note that, that does make you easy to manipulate if you're not going to think before you post, but also because it erodes our credibility and can do great harm to others. How does it erode your credibility? Do people trust you when you have a habit of posting stuff that's either just inflammatory, your opinion all the time? Is your opinion always right?
How many times can you be wrong
right
before people stop listening?
Right, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're always posting your opinion, and you tend to be wrong probably more than 50% of the time, right? At some point it's going to be an issue. Proverbs 10:19, when words are many, transgression is not lacking, but whoever restrains his lips is prudent. So less words, right? Not the hot take. Proverbs 15:2, you can turn there. Proverbs 15:2, since you're still in Proverbs. Proverbs 15, verse 2. The tongue of the wise commends knowledge, but the mouths of fools pour out folly. Pour out. Think about what. Think about that picture. Pour out. It's kind of like this, a lack of solidity. What do you pour out? You pour out liquid. So think about it. It's like you got a cup here. It's full of liquid. The foolish response is to give your hot take. Is anytime something comes by, it's like you get knocked over by it, and immediately spill. It's liquid. You can't help it. It just comes out of you. It spills all over the place. As Christians, we need to have solid thinking, not just emotional reactive responses that are liquid and volatile. So we need to think so that when we're knocked over, it's not a bunch of liquid just runs out of us. There's some solidity in there. It stays in the cup until we have time to really give thought to, does anything need to be released on my part? All right? I thought this was a helpful quote from the Wisdom Pyramid again. The temptation in today's world is to make every thought public. And by the way, that goes along with expressive individualism. We talked about that a while back, this idea that, you know, I feel and think and that is reality. And more than that, I actually have to express it for it to be reality. So he says, but is this wise? Some of the wisest people I know are very slow to publicly share their opinions. They recognize the fallibility of first impressions and the folly of insta-reaction. One of the distinguishing marks of a quarrelsome person is that he or she has no unarticulated opinions. Proverbs 21:23, whoever keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps himself out of trouble. You want to stay out of trouble? Don't give hot takes, right? I mean, if you are the press secretary for the president and the media ask you for something, even there, you probably shouldn't give a hot take, but you're going to have to respond. You are not in that position. Unless you're a PR person for your department, you probably don't have to give a ton of public statements on stuff. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong. There are times where Christians, because of issues of righteousness and justice and prophetic voice in the culture, or even a rebuke to some sort of widespread false teaching that's not just in your church, there are times where you do have to be very clear about those things. Hey, abortion is wrong. We can say that, and we need to say that publicly. That's not a hot take, by the way, because why? We've thought about it deeply. We've thought about it biblically. We've looked at the evidence of our culture to see this is really what's going on. It's not just my tribe trying to ramp stuff up to pretend like, no, this is actually happening. So we're going to say stuff about it. Okay? So that's hot takes. We don't want to do that. James also tells us a similar thing. James 1:19, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. All right, well, let's move on here. Always on communication as our default. This is not exactly mistreating other people. I'm just thinking of, like, the Psalms tell us there's times to ponder our way, to be meditative, to think. Here's what I'm saying. If you're always on your communication, like it's always by your bed, it's always, and you are ready to respond the second you get a message all the time, I don't think that's wise. That's what I'm saying. Because I don't know how you're really factoring in time to ponder, because this little thing can always buzz at you. Now, you might figure out ways to do it. I'm just saying I don't think it's going to be super conducive to that. That's all I'm saying. And here's why I'm putting it in the category of mistreating others, because the more of us that think and live this way, the more it becomes the expectation around us that everybody else is going to do the same thing. In other words, we're kind of subtly pressuring everybody else into, like, hey, you have to have an always-on response mode. Like, if I send you a text message and I don't get a response in a day, like, you're being rude. Well, okay, if you're my wife, yes, I'm being rude, right? If you're Pastor Rod, because, you know, I work at the church, he works at, yeah, I'm being rude. But maybe not. Maybe I'm not being rude to you. Maybe I just really, I had to prioritize other things. You cannot be my sole priority at the moment. That doesn't mean I don't love you and I don't want to communicate to you. It just means I can't do that right now, right? So we need to be able to do that. Okay, slander. Whew, we are not making good time. Slander, I'm going to jump ahead here. James 4:11-12. Here's what James 4:11-12. You can turn there if you want. When we think about slander, there's a couple different words. I'm just going to zoom in on one for the sake of time that gets used in multiple ways. It could be like, you know, adjective, noun, different, I mean, verb, different things. So it's the same idea. James 4:11-12, do not speak evil against one another, brothers. That's the word, speak evil. Katalaleo. So against, to speak. We're speaking against. Okay. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is only one lawgiver and judge, he who is able to save and destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor? Speak evil against is the idea of slander. There are times to correct people, but what we're talking about here is not the right place, the right person, the right way. We're talking about you're just speaking evil about somebody. It's not in the context of trying to restore them to fellowship with God and his people, and you're not the person who has the authority to do that in that situation, perhaps. It's just speaking evil. This is where I'm going to read an extended quote from Ranke. It's on page 167 to 168, but I think it's helpful in clarifying because we often misunderstand what slander is, okay? So if you have the book and you want to follow along, it starts on page 167, but just listen to this. Okay, so here we find slander a sin that violates the early Christian commandment because of its uncharitableness, that means lack of love, rather than its falsity. That's the key. Tim Keller and David Paulson define slander as, quote, not necessarily a false report, just an against report. The intent is to belittle another, to pour out contempt, to mock, to hurt, to harm, to destroy, to rejoice in purported evil. Slander is not a public debate over ideas or a public rebuke of false teaching. More on that later. We can certainly debate ideas and doctrine in public as long as we are fair and principled and represent our opponent's views with clarity and charity. What James 4:11-12 warns us against is attacking a person's motives and character so that the listener's respect and love for that person is undermined. In his comments on James 4, 11 through 12, written long before the advent of the iPhone, Pastor R. Kent Hughes said, quote, "Personally, I can think of few commands that go against commonly accepted conventions more than this. Most people think it's okay to convey negative information if it is true. We understand that lying is immoral, but is passing along damaging truth immoral? It almost seems a moral responsibility. This is why the definition of biblical slander, the biblical definition of slander is countercultural to the smartphone generation. By such reasoning, criticism behind another's back is thought to be all right as long as it is true. Likewise, degenerating gossip, of course it is never called gossip, is okay if the information is true. Thus, many believers use truth as a license to righteously diminish others' reputations. What is done in the name of, quote, exposing truth with the single goal of undermining someone's character is an expression of slander. Unless confronted, James 4, 11 through 12 warns, fault finders and fault spreaders eventually take their seats as rogue judges who stand over the law." That's powerful. I think it's helpful. I think it clarifies what slander is. Slander is not just, did I say something untrue? If the motive is to just speak against somebody. Now, again, there's like in a courtroom, a witness does have to speak what they saw. But even there, what's the difference? Their goal is not to speak against that person. It's not even to bring down their character. It's just to say, as a witness, here's what I saw. We're not saying judgment calls aren't going to be made. But what we're saying is slander is I'm going around trying to make people question this person's character. I'm going around trying to manipulate other people, right? Even if what I'm saying is true. All right, next, receiving gossip and slander. So slander is spoken of in Proverbs 18 as serving up these delicious morsels, right? The whisperer gives these delicious morsels to the ears, and you're kind of like chowing down on them with your ears. So if that's true, then what we have with digital media is an all-you-can-eat buffet of delicious morsels. What I mean is it's been weaponized because now there is so much access to slander. There are so many opportunities to give it, but then that also means to receive it, which is a problem. And so, you know, over 1 billion served at social media restaurant with it. Well, it's an all-you-can-eat buffet, and so what it means is people are getting fat on gossip and slander. This is a danger. And so it's ramped up to a new level. Ray Ortlund, quoted in Ranke's book, says, "With social media, we can now harm and embarrass and stigmatize people with far greater force than ever before in human history." The point is, if we're not supposed to slander, we're also not supposed to receive it, and Proverbs makes that clear. Let's see. "A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer," that's an idea of slanderer, "separates close friends." So we need to recognize that. When someone's trying to separate you from others, they're probably slandering, right? So the only way to shutter this drive-through is to stop going to the drive-through, right? So don't follow people on social media that are accustomed to speaking this way. Everything's a complaint about somebody else. If you want to shutter the drive-through, at least for you in your neighborhood, just stop going there. Like, you don't need to keep going there. Stop following them. You don't have to follow them. One more point on the idea of slander. I'm gonna go on. You can read that C.S. Lewis quote there. I think it's just helpful in pointing out that love is important here. And if we're always just itching, even for our enemy to have something really true, and then we find out that it's not quite as true, the terrible thing that was reported, and we kind of are sad, that is rejoicing. We have a heart that wants to rejoice in wrongdoing. Instead, we should be like, thank God that even they aren't that bad. Praise God, right? Okay, let's keep moving. Righteous habits to put on. Obviously, we're going to have to go very fast through this, so you'll have your homework to take home with you. Our guiding principle for communication is truth in love, Ephesians 4:15. I know the context there is not exactly the way I'm using it right here. I get that. I do think this is a fair application of it, though. When we're thinking of truth in love, that still applies to all communication, not just within the church and not just because it builds up the church, but because Christians are marked by truth in love. I think that's the point I'm making here. So truth is the content. Love is the motive. Love, and love, by the way, is defined by love for God first and then love for other people. It's not, do they like what I'm saying? That's not the definition of love. So we need to be able to have truth in love. The type of speech needs to be gracious and preserving type speech. Colossians 4:6, let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person. If you want to know how to answer each person, then you aim for a type of speech that is gracious and seasoned with salt. Even if you don't feel like you know all the words that you need to use, if you say, hey, I want to be gracious and I want to be seasoned with salt, you're going to do pretty well in what you say, right? Make that your goal. Deal with sin and conflict God's way. We don't have time to dig into this. We've done it with other times, other places. Matthew 18 is the way God has given us to deal with it. This is the method when you have conflict with somebody in your circle of influence. What I would say is if they're not in your circle of influence, you probably need to move on for sure, right? There's this person I'm in conflict with on Twitter. I think they live in Bangladesh. I don't really know, but I'm not giving up the fight. You need to give up the fight and move on, right? But if there's you have a conflict with someone in the church, you need to, the way you work that out is interpersonally face-to-face, right? And then if necessary, if there's true sin involved, you go through the steps of Matthew 18. And by the way, the goal of Matthew 18, you want to restore the erring, straying sheep. That's what happens right before he gives a specific description of what you do in church discipline. So it's truth and love. It's the same thing, but that's the process we follow. Rather than, here's a quote, crowdsourcing verdicts and spreading unfounded conclusions online, which can destroy the reputation of Christians. This is when the script of responding to accusations of wrongdoing goes satanically wrong. Don't do it Satan's way, do it God's way. Matthew 18, which if you notice in Matthew 18, what is one of the guiding principles is you keep the circle small as long as you can. Now, obviously, there are certain sins that need to go public faster, right? There are. Like you're talking abuse, right? I mean, that's the law enforcement may need to be involved in that if there's true abuse going on. So that's going to have to go, you know, embezzlement may have to go, you know, I mean, certain things that there's a lot of consequences that are going to have to happen right away. But here we're talking about just general things. And other thing is, again, I already mentioned this, but am I proximate? Am I near this person? If it's, you know, some random blogger in Bangladesh, it's probably not my issue to deal with, right? There are maybe, yeah, well, anyway, I'll leave it there for now. So it's countercultural to do it this way because we have an online mob mentality. And instead, we want to aim towards rescuing brothers and sisters out of danger. And so there's a right way to do that. Practical ways to guide your online communication. Number one, less of it. Less words, less sin. Proverbs says that. That's wisdom. Hashtag wisdom, right? Post that somewhere. You don't have to weigh in on everything. You don't always have to be on. You can have less communication. Number two, accountability. You need to recognize that when you don't have accountability, there is danger. And you might think, well, of course, I'm posting publicly. Anyone can come confront me. Yeah, they can. It'd be better if... Accountability does not work well when somebody has to chase you down. It works better when you say, I want to submit. You seem biblically wise. I want to submit to your wisdom. That doesn't mean you're God, right? I mean, obviously you can err, but I want you to know that I want you to tell me if you see me getting out of line on something. This is true probably the more and more followers you have, the more you need to do this, right? The other thing I would say is it'd probably be wise, obviously they need to be spiritually mature. Don't just pick, you know, if you're in middle school and you pick another middle schooler to help hold you accountable, that's probably not going to go well. So pick someone more mature, probably someone in an older stage of life than you. If you are pre-retirement, you probably need someone older than you. Once you get to retirement, you guys have to work that out. I'm not to that stage of life yet. You guys figure out what that looks like, but you still need accountability. Figure it out, right? And they need to know that you're not going to get defensive. You're not just going to, if the first time they come to you, you start arguing with them, this is not going to be a productive accountability thing. Even if you think they're wrong, accountability structures have humility built into them. Where you say, like, I don't think that's right, but I also realize you probably have a lot more wisdom than I do. Okay, number three, seek to have character that is marked by godly wisdom. I'm going to read this real quick. James 3:17, but the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere, and a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. If you read around that, he talks about what wisdom from below looks like, and it's stuff like malice and anger and hatred and attacking and all this other stuff. Wisdom from below above is peaceable. It's seeking peace, not at all costs. You don't sacrifice truth for the sake of peace, but it's not unappeasable. I want peace. I want reconciliation. It's gentle. It's strength under control that says, God is sovereign. I can trust him. I don't have to steamroll my opponents. I can be gentle with them. Doesn't mean there's not a time to be firm, but I don't have to act like a steamroller trying to get my way. Open to reason, not foolish, unreasonable, closed off to actually thinking. I'm not driven by emotions and the crowd. I'm giving biblical thoughtfulness to it. Full of mercy and good fruits, impartial. Listen, just because someone is inside or outside of your group and your circle doesn't mean they either are always right or always wrong. Now, you do take into account their worldview. I'm not saying you ignore the worldview. You obviously take that into account and say, okay, I think they're probably skewed. I should take that with a grain of salt. But the point is, you don't show partiality. You're on God's side, hopefully. That's where you want to be. Obviously, that can be prideful. Well, I'm on God's side, so anything I say is true. You need to submit, right? That's not what we're saying, but the point is, that's where you want to be. And so you're impartial. If a fellow Christian who holds all the same views about you says something that is not true, let's say they're even defending the issue of the pro-life side of things, and you're all on board with that, and you're ready. But if it's not true, you don't just affirm it and like it just because it's not true. You still would, you would say, hey, I don't think that's a true argument you're using, right? I'm with you, but I don't think that's a true argument. Let's be thoughtful about that. And if they're against you, you don't have to throw everything they say out. Probably wise not to just follow them, because if they hate you, I don't know why you're going to keep following them. But okay, so that's where we want to go. We want to have that sort of attitude, sincere as well. All right, so you can see some questions down there at the bottom, family discussion, personal reflection. I hope you'll take some time to look through that this week. We covered a lot. Hopefully the handout will help you as you just try to zoom in on areas where you feel most in danger, because we want to use our digital devices to the glory of God. So let me pray, and we'll dismiss. God, thank you for your word. And for your spirit, because we need your wisdom. And we know that you tell us when we ask you for wisdom, that you give it to us. When we ask with a heart that is humble, that is truly wanting to walk in your ways, that you give wisdom. And so we pray, would you give us wisdom for our communication in person and also online? And may we glorify you. In Jesus' name, amen.